Hello and welcome to the Permaculture Podcast with Scott Mann, a listener-supported program. My guest for this episode is Dr. Wayne Dorband, a member of the board of the Institute of Ecolonomics. He joins me to discuss the idea of what is ecolonomics and what he and his colleagues are doing to grow this idea, as well as how you can be a part of the process. Dr. Dorband joined me several months ago to discuss the Green Hackerspace he opened in Colorado as a place for individuals with ideas on how to build technology that leads to a better world, can incubate and grow their concepts while also socializing with other like-minded people. Today, we take that underlying ethos of creativity and a desire to make, to begin to understand how we can combine ecology and economics to earn a little bit of money while improving the earth. The audio on this episode did wind up a little fuzzy, and I'd like to thank Jay for letting me know that this happened on some other recent episodes. I did the best I could with the source audio to put this together, which also resulted in making some changes to my software, so future interviews hopefully don't suffer the same issue. Your feedback is always important for helping to improve the quality of these podcasts, and I appreciate it. I'm also thankful for everyone who contributes to the show. You can find out how to make a one-time or small monthly micropayment by going to thepermaculturepodcast.com/support. While you're there, you'll also find information about how to follow the show on Facebook or Twitter. Also, for those of you interested in the online PDC, which begins July 1st, there are still a few seats open. You can register by going to thepermaculturepodcast.com/PDC-registration or by following the link in the show notes. Now then, on to Dr. Dorband. I'll join you afterwards with some more thoughts.
Then could you give us an introduction to this idea of ecolonomics, and we can take the conversation from there?
Ecolonomics is a word that was coined or invented by the late actor Dennis Weaver back in the early 90s. And he formed the word by putting together the two words ecology and economy, and thus ecolonomics. And his best description of what he really intended for it to mean was something that I always say he said in his cowboy sort of manner. And I don't know if your listeners will remember Dennis Weaver, but he did a number of different movies and TV shows that involved cowboy characters. And one of them was Moncloud, and another one was Gunsmoke, and there's a whole bunch of others. But he used to say this. He said, we spent billions of dollars and thousands of years screwing the planet up, and we now need to show people how they can make a little bit of money making it better. And thus the combination of ecology and economy. And so Dennis invented the word and then started a nonprofit called the Institute of Ecolonomics in 1993. This is actually our 20th year anniversary, to move ahead the concept of showing people how they can make a little bit of money making the planet better.
And then that's part of your role, is being involved in this process to create a new generation of entrepreneurs who can combine these two ideas to make a living while making a better planet?
Correct. That's exactly our goals. Dennis asked me and a friend of mine, Scott Fardulis, before he died, carry on his legacy and move the Institute ahead. And we were reluctant to at first because he had such huge shoes to fill. And then we also were doing some other things in our lives, but 3 years after he died, which was about 3.5 years ago now, we did agree. And his widow, Jerry Weaver, who is still an honorary member of our board, was still asking us to be able to take it over because she was afraid that Dennis's legacy and the Institute was just going to die. And we agreed to at that time. And again, you hit it right on. Our goal is to help people be entrepreneurs, foster entrepreneurism or ecopreneurism, and help make the planet better.
How does the Institute and this idea come together to help develop this generation of ecopreneurs, as you say?
Sure. Several ways. One is through the topic we discussed before, which is really we try to create workplace type of environments, physical locations, so in this case, our hackerspace in northern Colorado, where aspiring ecopreneurs can have a place in which they can birth or mature their business ideas. And in that place, we provide a combination of space, equipment, supplies, maybe more important than anything, mentoring and a sense of community. We find at least that people are best able to both generate ideas and to mature ideas when they're in a communal circumstance rather than being in an isolated sort of typical workplace environment. So we use the hackerspace idea for that. We also have invested in businesses through the years. Invested meaning that we have come alongside ecopreneurs who had ideas that we felt were meaningful and that had the potential of having some level of business success. And we've actually gone a lot further than just providing space and mentoring and so on, but we've actually raised capital to help those businesses move ahead. And for doing that, we don't charge a fee, we don't act like consultants, but rather we negotiate with those ecopreneurs a potential ownership stake in their business by the Institute of Economics. So the Institute has probably 10 different businesses at any given time in which it has some ownership stake, in which it has some potential of generating income, which is the way that we pay the bills to keep our doors open.
That was my next question. I was wondering if investing in these businesses was in turn a way of generating that ongoing income for the Institute without having to seek donations or some of the other financing or money-raising activities that some organizations go through.
That's exactly right. Although we do fundraising through donative means also, and we do apply and receive grants and other forms of funding. But our primary form of funding is from these potential incomes that come from these entrepreneurial ventures that we invest in. Usually, it's not that we invest any of our own funds. We go out to third-party investors, but we do invest an awful lot of time. And like I said, make available. Most of these groups are groups that take advantage of using the hackerspace opportunity that we have so that they're actually physically located in our space. And that's not always the case. And I can think of one right now, Peter Novak with a company called Sundelier, which is a solar lighting system for businesses, for buildings. He never did occupy any space that we offered. We offered business consulting and mentoring and then actually did help him raise some capital.
And then in helping him raise capital, then you also took an ownership share in that business?
Yes.
So then the way that I'm picturing this is that rather than taking something from the business as it's growing at the front end, that by having an ownership stake in a company, you're gaining an income from that over the long term, allowing the company to develop and grow in the beginning, rather than taking some of that capital that they might need up front to get started. Rather, it comes after they've had some successes.
That's exactly right, Scott. And that's why it can be very attractive in that we're taking back in income that may or may not happen. And interestingly, more often than not, the ownership sort of position that we have is one where we don't share necessarily in losses, but we don't share in gains unless there are some. And usually it's a pretty creative sort of ownership scenario. So it literally is a risk reward. So if what we provided provides reward, then if there's some risk, we're taking risk in terms of our time and space and so on, but we aren't necessarily taking downside risk in terms of lawsuits or bad decisions on the part of the entrepreneur that would put the institute into some kind of a financial liability situation. So our liability, we take at the front end. We know what it is. We know how much we've invested. We know what those costs are, but we don't have unknown potential risks and loss that could occur down the road. Again, if the business were to take a direction that we wouldn't necessarily be approving of.
Does that make the Institute then kind of a silent partner as an owner of the company, or do you still take an active role after it's begun development?
It could be either. It would vary from situation to situation. More often than not, it's fairly silent. But in some circumstances, there's a more active role. It really depends on the circumstance.
If someone wanted to develop an ongoing relationship where they continue to have business mentoring and growth, then that might be a place where you or your partners would step in to continue to help that business grow?
Yes. So there's really three ways in which we are incenting entrepreneurs. And the last one's the one that we're probably most excited about. It's one that we haven't been able to take to the level we'd like to yet, because it is going to take some outside funding that we haven't yet acquired, but we have been able to do it at a smaller scale. Any given point in time, we're doing it with two or three individuals, and that's a program we call the Best of the Best, where we filter through business ideas and business people that have those ideas, and we select very carefully a small percentage of those that we see, probably 1 out of 100. And we offer those people, again, similar kinds of circumstances. Almost always it's a residence circumstance where they're getting space, they're again getting mentoring, they're getting, in this case, they're definitely getting funding. So we're providing in these cases almost always all the capital. We're taking a larger ownership position. By the way, on the previous examples I was giving, the ownership positions are very small. They're in the 5 to 7% range. In this Best of the Best circumstance, we're taking positions that might be as much as 50%, might be a complete, almost partnership relationship. And again, we're helping those people, and we usually do it for a minimum of a 2-year period of time. And then after that 2 years, we expect those people to basically go out on their own. There is no definitive stop and go on that time. It could be a year, it could be 2 years, but our history to this point has been 2 years. And then at that point, we do become very silent, but we have a larger ownership position also. Or if they've gone out and raised additional capital, that entrepreneur or those entrepreneurs might have even bought us out of some of our position. Our goal is to actually have as many as 10 of these resident at any given time, and there would be pre-funded, you know, alternative to school or to a business school circumstance. We find that particularly young entrepreneurs that are looking to do something innovative and creative, they don't fit very well in a traditional grad school circumstance. In some cases, not even into an undergrad circumstance. And so we think this is an alternative to them to really learn a lot. And we literally, in many cases, take them through almost, you know, business school 101, because usually they're very technically competent people in whatever it is they're interested in, but they don't really have very much in the way of business skills typically. And they can be of all ages, but our experience to this point has been mostly people that are, let's say, under 30.
Okay. And you've had some successes with the Best of the Best in developing some of these entrepreneurs through this process?
You have. Probably the best example is a guy named Paul Golden, who started a company called the Center for Sustainable Aquaponics. He fit that model I gave really well. He was here for 2 years. He developed a viable business, and his long-term goal was always to take it to third world countries, and he's in the process of doing that right now. We're coming up on 3 years into the relationship, and he's been out on his own now for a year.
Well, that is certainly a project that I'll have to link to in the show notes for folks to find out more about. Now, as you say that this is a residence Is this something that someone would need to come to you if they were selected?
Yes. The resident circumstances that the program is here in Northern Colorado. We're developing a location right now in the Dominican Republic, so we would have a Caribbean presence, and we think by the fall we'll have that program established where we can have one or two best of the best folks down there. And our goal eventually is to have multiple locations world, but right now it's the one that here in Northern Colorado and then the new one that we're developing in the Dominican Republic.
If there's someone who's involved in business development and this kind of hacker ethic, those makers and breakers, those ones who are building and trying different things, if there was one of the listeners who's involved in something like that, could they reach out to you about wanting to develop a secondary site? Are you looking for partners at that level at this point?
Absolutely. We would entertain all kinds of discussion and thoughts and ideas about that. Probably easier to grow that way than it would be to just be organically finding places ourselves. That's the way that the relationship in the Dominican Republic established, is a group that already had a presence there and was looking to do something in this line. So yes, we would certainly look at that. And we would certainly look at your listeners being potential partners in our hacker mentality, our business development mentality, and finally our best of the best mentality and program.
And their best way to reach you, would that be through the Institute of Ecolonomics or through your Mountain Sky group?
The Institute of Ecolonomics is probably the best way. There's a sign up form on the website where we'll just give us your name and contact information, and we'll be in touch with you, or you can call us. The Institute is managed out of our location, our central location of Best of the Best and of the hackerspace here in Northern Colorado. So if they were to call in and just express what their interest was in any of those areas, they'd be directed to the right person in our organization to see if we can move something ahead.
With all these amazing projects that you're connected with through the development that you're doing, what kind of inspiration do you get from this? What kinds of projects are you seeing that are really helping to bring about the kind of change that you'd like to see in the world?
They vary. The one that I just described with Paul Golden is a great example. Paul had received two masters at the same time from Stanford, one in physics, one in environmental engineering. And the career path that most of his colleagues, so those his peers, the folks that were getting their masters and PhDs the same time he was, their career path was primarily Silicon Valley oriented. And they were in high demand. Again, this was 3 years ago. The solar industry has changed a little bit in the last 3 years. And Paul was in high demand, but it really wasn't what he wanted. He really wanted to do something that would be more meaningful for the Ecolonomic sort of ethos, even though he didn't even know the word existed when he first reached out to us. And it was an amazing 2 years to have him here. And he touched my life. He touched a lot of the people that he was around in a really positive way. Hopefully we did the same for him. I think he would agree that we did. So the inspiration of these creative people with their amazing creative ideas is always what, you know, gives me inspiration, at least. We have another group that literally we just started a relationship with in a hacker circumstance, which they could turn into a best of the best. I can't talk specifically about what they're doing, and that's the other thing, is we're very careful about protecting various circumstances. But in their case, they're designing a solar kiln that is self-replicating, so that essentially you can use the kiln to make another kiln. And it's a pretty heavy-duty physics circumstance, not one that I would want to venture a very high understanding of. And beyond that, again, what they've done to this point is proprietary. We're careful to protect that. But again, two guys, just finished undergraduate circumstances, didn't see how they were going to fit into grad school very well. One of them came from Texas, the other one from Connecticut, Massachusetts area, and met here and started working on their idea. And again, it gives us a inspiration just to see what they're doing. They're so fresh and they're so full of excitement. And, you know, that's pretty nice to come into work to see every day.
I know the older that I get, sometimes it's easy to feel cynical about the world and the things that are happening. But I know that there are a lot of these great ideas that are going around from all age groups and all kinds of people tackling really big problems. And it's nice to know of those other projects that are out there to knock off my own kind of bitter edges at times.
Yeah, that's the way it is with me too. So it's pretty easy to get up every morning and come and find out what's going on here at our place.
I really like hearing about just all this great work. It's nice for me to just know about it beyond, you know, what you read in the newspaper and everything else. Only certain things make it to a point where they're loud enough for people to hear, but there's all this stuff going on in the background that people need to know about.
We agree.
Are many of the projects that are coming out and that Ecolonomics are developing, would you say that they're more high-tech, low-tech, or again, is it a broad range of opportunities?
As it relates to the technology side, it's a range. It'll go all the way from very high-tech, like I just described in this project with the solar kiln, to a little more on the low-tech end as it relates to just, let's say, sustainable farming techniques, which many of them were, you know, been around for thousands and thousands of years, and we've sort of forgotten about them. So they're not in any way considered to be high-tech. So it's all over the board. I would say it's probably pretty close to a 50-50 mix of what we end up working on is, you know, 50% low-tech, 50% higher-tech.
And because this is about helping to develop people and systems that can build a better world, it's not necessarily directed in any particular way. It's the quality of the idea and the opportunity is more important than necessarily how it's going to get there.
Yeah, that's very true. And really, even it's probably more related to the person even than it is the idea. And by the way, the best of the best is generally categorized as an accelerator, and that's business form now that's developing primarily in the tech space. And there's several great examples of very successful accelerators. What I at least understand from the people that run those and what our experience has been is that a lot of times the person that you select comes in with an idea, and very often the business they end up developing doesn't really look like what that initial idea was. It changes. The person's integrity, the person's excitement, person's capabilities, those don't change. They're there and they stay there. But the idea itself might change dramatically. So we don't focus as ideas as we do on the people behind the ideas. And certainly, you know, whatever their initial idea is has got to have some level of interest and excitement for us. But we don't believe that it necessarily will be what we end up with from a business perspective. We have focused more on Ecolonomic living, lifestyles, and even more specifically in the agribusiness space than we have on a whole myriad of other areas. So, for example, Dennis Weaver's passion was really alternative transportation, any kind of non-fossil fuel vehicles were very interesting to him. That's not a huge interest of our current leadership. So we're not focusing on that nearly in the way that Dennis did during his 15 years of very capable leadership of the Institute.
When you're talking about helping to develop the people who bring in the idea, I think of someone like Sir Richard Branson, who was like a serial entrepreneur who just tried again and again and again. Even with his failures, it was that he had the right mindset and the right attitude to keep doing and doing and doing. Is that part of this, that if someone comes to you with a good idea and that what they're trying to accomplish seems to be a part of who they are and what they want to do, that by encouraging that, whether their initial idea succeeds or fails, that they're likely to come up with something else and to keep trying?
Absolutely. Our pretty strong view is that entrepreneurs are born, they're not made. And it doesn't mean that no one learns to be an entrepreneur, but I don't believe very many do. Most have it sort of in their genes. And there's a number of different attributes that they have. And one of them is clearly this mentality of really not even accepting the word failure at all, but realizing that they are going to fail. So failing just leads to another try. And the next try might be at a similar sort of thing. It might be at something completely different, but they just don't accept that failure, which is just sort of quitting, ever is an option. And yet they're not troubled by failing and having to do something many, many times before it succeeds. I mean, I think Thomas Edison's quote is probably the best one, which is that, you know, I didn't invent a light bulb. I figured out 10,000 ways in which it wouldn't work to make one. So it wasn't that he was successful in determining and developing the method. It was more that he was successful in trying so many different things and realizing that failing wasn't bad, but rather that it was leading into the next step that, you know, he says 10,000 times he had to take before he ended up with the one that worked.
We've covered a lot for me of where I was going with this, with the introduction to the idea and how you are doing development and helping this process, and as an encouragement for my listeners to, if you will, develop some of their own ideas and consider reaching out to you or other individuals who would be interested in helping them take their next step on their ideas. Are there other points that you would like to add to this interview to round out the conversation?
Only that in today's world, the concept of abundance, which there's even a best-selling book now that's written with that title, is one in which the simple premise is that we're creating technology so quickly today, and there's an exponential growth with it, that if we keep the right attitude, we can overcome many of our global problems just by letting technology run its course, and meaning that if we just let entrepreneurs keep developing and keep trying, like the example I gave about Thomas Edison, that there's probably a solution that can come to solve many of the problems that we have. I would like to see one of the other things that we might do that we're not doing at the level yet that I'd like is a more of a forum kind of a setting where people who have ideas at the very, very early stage would be able to share those ideas with others, not worrying about whether they'd be stolen or not, understanding that some of what might be their long-term value might be their proprietary nature, but at least at the very, very front end, to be able to share ideas, share questions, share fears, share doubts, share successes in a open sharing community. And I'd love to get some ideas from other folks, some of your listeners, that they might have about that. That's something that we're looking to move ahead and just haven't been able to really kick it off the ground. So I'd love to get people's thoughts on that. So the very early stages of entrepreneurial development.
That's an idea that's similar to something that I've wanted to do for some time. For me, there are those moments where you sit and you dream and you come up with an idea, but you have no idea how to get from, like, you're not even at A yet. It's just this little seed that might grow into something, but you don't even know where to begin to take it. To be able to have a community where that could be grown, or even just to be told, no, that's not something that I think that we can accomplish now, and here's a well-reasoned argument on why. Or be able to put together a plan and have someone poke holes at it so you know where you need to strengthen something. That kind of a community I could see is very, very useful Is that something for like an online forum?
Yeah. I'm thinking it'd be a combination of online forum and chat, potentially using some of the tools, the technical tools out there, Skype and so on. Because I think sometimes that live sort of interaction is important. Other times it's fine to just put some comments out there and then over a period of time to let other people react to them. Of forum types of activities as well as more live chatting. But it is all virtual. So it would mean that somebody in anywhere in the world that had some kind of internet connectivity would be able to participate in those kinds of discussions.
I'll certainly get this out there so that people who are interested can get in touch with you or myself and try to begin to get something off the ground.
That would be great.
Yeah, there's a lot of potential there, I think, of just Google Hangouts and video feeds. And then as these other distributed ideas come together, to do so, the possibility of non-virtual opportunities of just, you know, let's do like a Maker's Day or something like that, where a bunch of people bring some ideas together and share and get to handle and touch things that people are building. And there my imagination goes.
That's awesome.
Thank you so much for taking this time to speak with me again and to give me and the audience a better idea of what's going on out there in the world when it comes to ecology and economics.
Appreciate it, Scott. Best wishes.
And that was Dr. Dorband. He is someone working with an organization designed to advance human creativity and technology while also investing in the people who make sustainable and renewable solutions possible. For me, that's a pretty powerful place to find ourselves in as we work to move through many of the large hurdles ahead of us. As I've said with Eric Tonesmeyer before, I like civilization being able to turn the lights on. So let's work together to find ways to keep that a possibility while lifting others up and applying permaculture to make the landscape and our lives more resilient. If you're interested in helping myself and Dr. Dorband develop this online makers forum idea that he presented so that we can investigate possible solutions, please let me know. Leave a comment on the webpage for this episode, send me an email, show@thepermaculturepodcast.com, or give me a call, 717-827-6266. Or you can reach Dr. Dorband through the Center for Ecolonomics by calling his office, 303-495-3705. That's the same number you can use to reach out to him if you'd like to help expand on any of the other projects he's working on, such as your own local green hacker space or business accelerator, or if you have an idea of your own that you'd like to see could be one of the best of the best. And that rounds out this episode, so a few updates. Coming up next week is the architect Bob Tice. We talk about his work as a natural builder, studying with Christopher Alexander, and how you can make a difference where you are. Then on July 2nd is Eric Olson of Permaculture Artisans to discuss his work, the Permaculture Skills Center he and his team are creating, and professional permaculture. From there out into the future, I've already interviewed and am editing Josh Trott of D-Acres. We wander over a range of subjects related to his work, and also Nikki Jabor, author of The Year-Round Vegetable Gardener. Until the next time, take care of the earth, yourself, and each other. And that quick legal note, the Permaculture Podcast with Scott Mann is released under a Creative Commons Attribution, no derivatives, no commercial license. Share it with whoever you like, but tell them where you got it, and don't change it or sell it.